Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Parent Choices for Struggling Teens with Lon Woodbury, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Parent Choices for Struggling Teens. I'm Lon Woodbury, located in North Idaho. Now, raising a child is a difficult job at best, but parents who have children with emotional, behavioral, and or learning problems find they need help, and often professional help. So here's where we talk with professionals who are devoting their lives to help those children and their families. The topic today is five essential issues to discuss with your teen and tween, and the guest to talk about that and maybe give us some answers is Jay Fitter. Jay, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you, Lon. Thanks for having me on your show.
Okay. Well, Jay is a two decades, he says, his experience as a licensed marriage and family therapist, and also does parenting workshop leaders, and the author of a new book, Respect Your Children, A Practical Guide to Effective Parenting. And so, okay, Jay, your topic, the issues to discuss with your teen and tween, and so a lot of the audience here are parents of that age group or professionals that work in it. So let's talk about some of the issues that are very commonly come up and might have a special twist when a kid is having the behavioral problems of some sort. How about clothing trends? It gets very faddish, but what should be the important thing a parent should keep in mind on clothing trends and how they talk and what they tell their parents? Or what they tell their kids?
Well, I think it's so important that parents understand what's going on, and not just when they take their kids to, you know, out shopping for clothing and such like that for school. But it's just sort of like, well, I'm going to let them pick out what they want. But to realize that a lot of clothes have a lot more meanings than seem apparent. One of the things that I encourage parents to do, if they have questions about the kinds of things that kids are wearing, you know, kind of things that might be associated with, is to interact with the school administration, to be able to say, to talk to the counselor or an assistant principal or something, are there any certain kinds of clothing or trends that are going on that are affiliated now with, for example, gang affiliation? And depending on the school you go to, there's a lot of things. I mean, I've had kids wearing a red, putting a red handkerchief in their back pocket is a sign that they're affiliated with a gang. And parents will say, oh, they don't think anything of that. They think, well, it's just a style, it's just a fad. Or, you know, creasing their T-shirts or something like that. So I think that parents need to be aware. They need to know that they're not going to hear these things necessarily from their kids, especially if their kids are getting involved in high-risk behaviors. But to use the resources that are out there to know that, hey, you know what? This is not okay, and I'm aware now that I know because the school is on top of it. The school is going to know what kinds of things are associated with certain behaviors and certain kinds of things that you may or may not want your child to be, you know, associating with.
You know, there's various styles. You know, Gothic comes to mind, but various styles that go along with some of the rock bands or the music of the teenagers. And there's a lot of meaning in that. I know one of the things that I've ran into in the work I've done with therapeutic boarding schools is black is generally discouraged because black has connotations. So I would suspect the parents should need to be tuned into those kind of connotations too.
Yeah, definitely. You know, black is really big with a lot of, you know, goth behavior, attitudes, and things like that. And a lot of times, especially when you get into high school, parents, you know, need to realize that it's sort of that high school is sort of a microcosm of our whole society, and within the confines of that school, you're going to have kids who are going to be future gangbangers, future drug addicts, future convicts, future doctors, lawyers, teachers, engineers, the entire spectrum. And who your children end up affiliating with, who they start associating with and becoming friends with, is going to have a big impact on the direction that they're going to go as they move on beyond high school. you know, and so certain type of, once you go to clothing trends and the certain ways that certain groups like goth or something dress, they're going to kind of be attracted to that crowd. And where are they going, and where are their values, and, you know, where the goals and things like that. So being, you know, understanding those kind of things, that this whole, no matter what school you go to, you're going to find the whole spectrum just about of where kids are going to be in their lives. And as parents, we need to, you know, recognize that some of the way our children dress can have quite a large impact on how it affects them and where they end up ultimately going.
And it can also be an indication of their emotional state. Like, black is not only goth, but it's also sort of depression. Somebody's depressed, I feel black, you know, and sort of hiding. So it can indicate the emotional state the kid's in, too.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and even beyond colors, when you look at, you know, there are certain kids, which are very, not uncommon at all, are, at least in Southern California, are children who cut on themselves. You know, they call it self-mutilization, you know, and they will, you know, generally it occurs, they will cut on themselves on their arms and on their upper legs and things like that. So if you find, for example, your teen wearing clothes, for example, it's a very warm day, but they're wearing clothes where their arms are covered up all the time, or certain parts, you know, or their legs are always, they never wear shorts or anything like that. That's a, you know, it's like, why, you know, to be a little bit more involved as far as, why are you dressing this way, you know, to because they may very well be, you know, cutting on themselves, which is associated with, can be related to a lot of things that are going on emotionally with them. So once again, it's just being aware and not just simply saying, you know, hey, it's just a style, it's what they want to do, it, I'm not going to, and I'm just sort of oblivious to what's going on.
And ignore maybe the stereotypes, because boys can cut as well as girls or have eating disorders. You know, cutting, generally, the image I've heard has been girls tend to do it. But guys do that too, fairly often. So you need to stay away from any stereotypes you might have done and look at it. One thing I've suggested to parents, and look at the way the kid's dressing, if it turns your stomach, there's maybe something wrong going on.
Yeah, sometimes in your gut you can kind of have a sense of... That there is more going on, and often it manifests itself in a lot of other ways too, and just in their behaviors and the way they interact with you, they're isolating themselves and things like that. That those can be, you know, warning signs that there are other things happening. That you know, I mean, sometimes you have kids who they react to things so much differently than adults do. You know, their life experience is so much more limited. You know, I've had teens who, you know, contemplating suicide because their, you know, their boyfriend or girlfriend broke up with them. You know, whereas an adult, you might say, well, you know, it's not that big of a deal. And so if you see it that way, and they go, it's no big deal, they just broke up, you know, we need to realize, we need to put ourselves sometimes in our kids' shoes, and to see that these kind of events can be pretty traumatic. And what can we do, first of all, to recognize if there are warning signs, and also how can we be there as a parent? How can we be there instead of saying, oh, snap out of it, or something like that? Because saying snap out of it is just another way of saying, I'm not really too interested in what's going on with you.
Yeah, I think that's an important message, and you got to remember, something that seems little to you is going to be overwhelming. A breakup is the end of the world sometimes to some of these kids.
Yes, that's very true. I mean, I've experienced situations where I've worked with families where teens have actually committed suicide over breakups. And like I say, as an adult, you look at it as everybody has breakups. I don't know anyone who hasn't been dumped before. But mm-hmm. when it's the first time or something, you're very serious about someone, and you don't, because that's your whole life. Your whole life is their high school or what's going on and how they're viewed by their peers or things like that. Or that's why you have recently, you know, reading stories about kids who have committed suicide over being cyberbullied or things like that. And then once, as an adult, you think, of big deal, you know, I'm just going to get off of Facebook, something like that. We don't realize how much these kind of things impact our kids, because they are so vulnerable, so sensitive, and their life experience is so limited.
Okay, let's imagine some parents see something that, like the clothing you mentioned, warm weather and long sleeves, and or they're wearing their changes, colors have become drab or dark, or some sort of change in behavior, how would they approach talking to their teen about that?
Well, I think to in essence, let their children know that I'm concerned. I'm seeing some things going on, and I'm concerned, and I want us to talk about it. Not, you're doing this wrong, this needs to change, but to let them know that this is something that I want to be there for you, I want to help you, and to try to understand what's happening. And that's where, you know, for example, I talk about in my book, you know, Respect Your Children, about learning how to communicate with our kids. And people so often see communication as just speaking. In reality, speaking is just is actually a very small part of communicating, because anybody can talk, anybody can give advice, but so much of communication is actually listening and understanding what's going on. So as a parent, to be able to listen to what our child is saying, and when we talk to them, to take the time to, for example, shut our computer screen off, to turn off the TV, to make eye contact with them, to spend some alone time where they're not interrupted by their siblings or something like that, and to let them know this is something that I'm concerned about, and I see this going on, and I want to kind of be here for you. And I think that's the best chance. Doesn't mean it's always going to work, but that's your best chance, where if your child genuinely believes that you're concerned and you want to be there for them, they're going to be much more willing to open up to you than if they just see you as, you know, here's the quick fix to your problem.
I think consistency, too, is important. That's a strategy that probably should be started early on. I would imagine it would be much tougher if the parent hasn't paid too much attention until all of a sudden an issue comes up and they get concerned, and then they try to do that talking. I imagine it'd have to be a lot more patience before they really could break through and get into a conversation. Is that a right assumption?
Oh, most definitely. I mean, when I run parent workshops, for example, you know, our parents come in, very often they have teenagers, and there's all these problems going on, and suddenly the parents are like, okay, we need to do something now, we need to figure out how to do it, and we'll address issues. And I always tell them, I say, the first meeting, I always say, you're really excited about this because these are ways that you can interact better with your kids and such, but realize, if you have teenagers, they're not going to be too motivated. They could care less. Matter of fact, they'd prefer you didn't come to this workshop. They're not interested in changing things. They're perfectly content the way things are, because this is the way things have always been. It's like a parent who ignores or is not available for their child until suddenly their child is exhibiting all of these high-risk behaviors, and then suddenly they say, we're going to start eating dinner together as a family, or we're going to start going to church together, or we're going to start doing this. And at that point, the teen's saying, you know, no thanks, I'm not interested. You know, I don't want to, I have my own support system already. They're not going to say it in those words, but I've got my own life going. I don't really need you. And that's where I always, you know, I encourage parents to, you know, even look and think about these things before they become parents. Because when you have, for example, if you have, you know, kindergarten, first, second grader, when they come home from school, what's the first thing they want to do? They want to come and talk to mom or dad and show them what they did today and tell them about everything. You're the most important adults in their life, and they want to tell you about everything that's happening. And that's where parents, I think, have the opportunity to build that bridge, to strengthen it, to be there, instead of just saying, oh, that's nice, yeah, whatever, I'm busy now, I don't have time to talk to you. But to build that relationship, to build that sense of listening, that taking the time, shutting things off, and hearing what they have to say, and you continue to build it as time goes on, as the years move on, that they know that you are always there for them, that they can always come and they can always talk, and you're always going to listen to what they have to say. Then when they're teenagers and there are struggles and things going on, it's going to be a lot easier for them, because it's never going to be a change. It's always, you know, mom has always been there, dad's always been there, you know, we've always been able to talk about things, and they're not judging me, they're listening to what I say, and they're trying to give me feedback, and they're trying to help me, and I know they really care. And they're always, you know, I've always been a priority. That's when you have a lot more success when they're teenagers, because they're going to be more willing to come to you, as opposed to suddenly you're going to change because now it's a crisis.
And I had a guest on, an author some time ago, Ron Toffels, pretty popular. He used the term second family. And what you were describing is a is something to where the kids are not getting the satisfaction or communication with their parents, so they go to their peers, and that becomes a second family, and sometimes it's even more important. So what have you done or what have you recommended to parents when the kids are lost, heavily lost into their peer group?
Well, I encourage you, first of all, that they need to be patient, because you're looking at trying to change behaviors that have been going on for several years, and not just your child's behavior, but also your behavior, what you've been able to do, because yes, that's true. I mean, if you find many, many kids who are involved in gangs, for example, you know, these are kids who got involved in gangs because, like, after school there was nobody home, or there was they didn't have someone to be, in a sense, a family. So these other, you know, the gang members or such, they became their family in essence. They became available for them. So as a parent, to begin to make these changes, to be patient, to let your child know that this is real, that this is, I genuinely realize that maybe we haven't spent as much time together, I haven't been as available as I need to be, and I want things to try to improve, and to be consistent there with them, but at the same time, being able to set boundaries, even though, you know, it's some parents will go to the extreme and think, okay, I'm going to give my child everything now just to make up for what a crummy parent I've been my whole life. And that doesn't work, because they're just going to take advantage of you and they're not going to learn anything from that. They don't need another friend. They need a parent who's going to be consistent, who's going to be there, who's going to genuinely show that they are interested in them and want to help and guide them. And in time, there's no guarantee, but that's your best chance, I think, is to let your child know this is not a one-time thing, but I realize that, you know, things haven't gone well in the past, and I need to make some changes as far as parenting goes, and these are the way things are going to start to be and start showing them by your example, not just your words.
Yeah, and it'll probably work. In most cases, it'll probably work, but it's much more difficult, and so parents have to keep that in mind. Well, let's talk a little bit about an issue that's sort of related, because I can see, and a parent gets into that, okay, there's going to be boundaries, and I'm going to do better, and then they set up punishment. Consequences are discipline, but they see it as punishment. There's a difference between discipline and punishment and setting boundaries. Could you talk about that a little bit, and particularly the punishment and how it could backfire?
Sure. And this is kind of something that I use and I talk about with groups and people and such, is I really try to differentiate the two, you know, punishment and discipline. And punishment, in my opinion, from my perspective, is something that is not very well thought through. It's spontaneous. It's done out of anger. It's done out of frustration. It's often retaliatory. It's often based on what kind of a day I had at work. And so it's just a reaction. I'm upset, and I'm reacting to what you did. You did something wrong, so, okay, you lose. You're going to be grounded for 6 months. Or I'm going to hit you until I feel like I've hit you enough, because I'm doing it out of anger. And the thing is that nothing good comes out of that, because there's no thought that goes into it. It's just a matter of, this is the way that I can vent. And basically, you're the only person in the world that I can do this to. I can't vent my frustrations or my anger about what you did or something to anybody else. I can't, if somebody at work did this to me or said something like this to me, I can't go and hit them or my boss, or I can't tell them shut up and get out of here or something like that. But I can treat you that way, which goes to back to the idea of respect, which is what to me is such a pivotal point, is respecting our children, which is not giving control to them, but treating them in such a way that they are important to us. So in punishment, it's just a lot of me getting a chance to vent, to just let my frustrations out. Discipline, on the contrary, on the other hand, discipline is something that is thought through. It's goal-oriented. It's designed to help our child. It's designed to teach our child. This is an issue, to be able to say, this is an issue, and how are we going to deal with it? What kind of rewards, what kind of consequences are we going to use to help correct this behavior, to help deal with this behavior? And that is something that can work. That's something that takes a lot more time and effort for parents to do, to be able to think, okay, if this occurs, this is how we're going to handle these situations. We're not going to overreact, and ground our children for 6 months, because, and then 3 days later come back and say, okay, I changed my mind. It's not 6 months. You're only grounded for, you know, a week or something like that. That shows inconsistency. It tells the kids that what we say doesn't really matter because we're going to change our minds. Or we come back and, you know, I'm sorry, I apologize because I overreacted and things like that. So discipline has to be something thought through, and it's something that, in my opinion, should be addressed and thought about prior. Kind of not unlike a football team. I mean, a football team doesn't come out Sunday morning and say, okay, what should we do? How should we play this team today? They practice, you know, off-season. They practice all week long preparing for this team, because when something happens, they know this is how we're going to handle it. And I think that's the same idea as parents, you know, knowing ahead of time, how are we going to handle these things when they violate these rules or something like that? What is our plan? Instead of trying to sort of go, just respond to something and then later regret how we reacted to it.
Mm-hmm. I like the way you described, and I fully agree on what punishment is. And my favorite thing is our way to look at it. It's me imposing pain on you until you conform to what I want. And it's very, as you say, very reactive and not very well thought out, and looks pretty ugly, actually, when you try to describe it. Well, let's go on to academics, you know, school. Kids have a tendency to, they might enjoy school for the wrong reasons or not the best reasons, you know, socializing. But what do you need to do with the school and the attitude towards school, and how can parents help them have a positive attitude and be successful?
Well, I think parents sometimes just assume the kids understand the importance of academics. In reality, they don't. When we were kids, I mean, what's important to us, whether it's elementary school and you want to go play with your friends after school, or you're a teenager and you have a party to go to, or you want to go hang out with your boyfriend or girlfriend, you know, or the last thing you want to do is do homework. I mean, it's like, what's the, you know, or study for this test or something like that. And so parents, you know, sometimes get very frustrated. Oh, you got this grade. You didn't, you know, and then there's all these consequences and things like that. And we need to help them understand, I think. I mean, I see so many teens who will come in here and we'll sit and we'll talk about the impact and the choices that they make in junior high and high school and how it's not designed. I mean, doing homework today, there's no benefit today. What are you going to get from doing homework today? I mean, it's not like, oh boy, life is better today because I did homework. And I help them see that, yeah, I agree with you. It certainly isn't more fun than going out and hanging out with your friends. But on the other hand, what are you going to think 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now? The choices that you make, and that the choices you make in school today, as far as academics are concerned, you know, and this is once again something that works a lot better when the children are younger, when they first start school, the importance of, you know, of education, that the choices you make for these few years, especially junior high and high school, you know, will have an impact for the next 50 or 60 years of your life, what you'll be doing. You know, will you be struggling? Will you not be able to have a place to live? Will you be working at a fast food restaurant for your whole life or something? Or will you be able to do the kind of things you want to do in life, be able to, you know, have support a family, to have a car that runs, to be able to go on vacations, to be able to do things? And often, you know, teens don't kind of make that connection between those two things. I mean, one of the things I will do sometimes is I'll take my arms and spread them apart as far as I can and say, you know, when you're in like junior high, high school, everything between my arms are like all the possible careers that there are in the world out there. And as you progress through high school, if you are able to realize that, you know, these kinds of things and the impact that it has, those arms stay just as far apart. But as you begin to move on and you make choices that this is important, I want a more immediate gratification, the arms start getting closer and closer together, because some of these options are no longer, you no longer have the option of these things. If one day you decide, gee, I think I'd like to be a doctor, you know, I'm kind of getting my life together, I want to be a doctor, I'm 18, 19 years old, you know what, for the most part, it's kind of too late. because the kids who want to be doctors, they're the kids who are taking AP classes and honors classes in junior high and AP classes in high school, so that when they're in undergrad, they're taking the, you know, they're doing so well that they're the ones you're going to be competing with to get into the med school classes, into the spots, and it's virtually impossible. So giving them the opportunity to realize that these are all open to you now, but by the choices you make and looking at seeking out, you know, more immediate gratification, although it's fun now, you're closing these doors, you know, potentially forever, that you may one day, 5, 10, 20 years from now, want to be able to do and explore, what you know, and feel pretty frustrated because you gave that up because of the, you know, the fun of going to a movie or going to a party or something like that.
You know, one of the things here, you mentioned earlier homework, and my thought while you were talking about homework is that all too often some of the homework is sort of rote, a little bit mindless, and can easily be seen as pointless because you just do the same thing over and over again, the drill, as was called in education circles, drill and kill type of thing. And that would make it difficult, so a parent would have to, and how would you help a parent go through, yes, I know it seems so pointless, but this is the way things are due. Part of it, you need to satisfy the system. How would you explain that?
One of the things I tell kids is when you're in different classes, is you have to view it, you know, kids, sometimes we take things too personal, adults do as well, but I will tell them that, you know, in high school, or even in college, that sometimes we need to view these classes like as a game. Like this is a game, like it's Monopoly or some whatever game you play, you happen to play, and the teacher makes the rules. And it's kind of your job to figure out what are the rules of this game and to try to be the best player I can at this game. And not take it so personal as, oh, this is so stupid, this doesn't make any sense. But you know what? It's a game. I realize this. Some of the stuff is going to be relevant and helpful, and other things are just they're mindless, like you say. I mean, sometimes you might have a science class, and you try and do a great job and turn in a you know and do a science project, and they knock you down because you misspelled some words, and you feel like, what's the point? It has nothing to do with the science I was trying to do or what I was trying to work on. But if you know that your science teacher is a stickler for grammar and punctuation, you know, and all those kind of things. Okay, that's the game. I'm going to play the game by their rules and try to be the best I can at it.
So, how do the kids respond to that when you talk to them in that way?
Generally, pretty positive because they can kind of laugh about it in a way and realize, you know what? If I see it as a game, I'm not going to tell my teacher it's a game. But if I see it as, if I can look at it like a game, I'm not taking it so personal. Like they're torturing me. I'm like, okay, fine. It's just they don't realize, but I see their class a game, and I'm just going to learn the rules and be the best player at it that I can, and move on to the next class. Because all this is like a step. And I tell them sometimes it's like. It's like if you wanted to go to the top of the Empire State Building and the elevators were broken, you have to take the stairs. You have to climb on the ninth step before you can get to the 10th, or the 10th before you can get to the 15th. You can't get to the third floor unless you take the steps on the first two floors. Even though you could care less about the first or second floor, you have to take those steps in order to get to the third floor, to get to the 5th and the 20th and the 80th floor or something like that. So to look at it in terms of, you know, this is just another step. I'm doing it. It's not going to really have any, it's not going to have any great impact on my life necessarily, but I have to get past this step so I can go on to the next step.
Ah, I like that analogy, and it works pretty well. Well, we need to take a quick break. This is Lon Woodbury with Parent Choices for Struggling Teens. We're talking to Jay Fitter about five essential issues to discuss with your teen and tween, and so far we've only gotten to two of them, but hopefully we can get the rest of them. But, we'll take about a one-minute break, and then we'll be right back. Raising children is a tough job. The job is even harder due to all the distractions, temptations, and dangers facing teens and their parents in our modern age. Some of these children are especially challenging and make such poor decisions as teens that their parents fear for their child's safety and future. I'm Lon Woodbury, and as an independent educational consultant, in my 22 years of practice as Woodbury Reports, we have worked to help hundreds of parents individually throughout the country who fear for their child's future. We also have an extensive website, strugglingteens.com, that provides as much objective information as we can to help parents. And we produce an LA talk radio show interviewing leading professionals who are helping parents right after Answers for the Family.
If you have a child whose decisions make their future in doubt, and you are looking for help, you can call me at 208-267-5550, and I'll be glad to try to help you. Or check my website, strugglingteens, that's one word, .com.
Welcome back to Parent Choices for Struggling Teens. This is Lon Woodbury, and we're talking with Jay Fitter. And Jay is the author of Respect Your Children, A Practical Guide to Effective Parenting. And we've been talking about the teens and some of the issues, how to discuss them with them. So let's go on to one with the hormones raging at that age, the girlfriends and boyfriends, and how can parents handle this cauldron?
Well, it's a difficult challenge, and every parent can relate to it. I'm sure if you have teenagers, and also you can relate to it, you know, when we were kids ourselves. You're going to have, that's just a normal thing. Being interested in boys and girls and things, it's just a normal part of growing up and the hormones and things like that. But once again, helping. The whole idea of communication, I think, with our children and helping them see that, you know, because so often you'll have kids in school who are doing well, who are trying to, you know, have some goals and, you know, goal-oriented and direction that they want to go in life and feel like this is not working out very well because, the popular kids are the bad boys, the bad girls, the partiers, the ones like that. And there's a real sense of attraction to that. And as a parent, you know, that's where, you know, interacting with our kids and helping them understand and be involved in, you know, in their lives, that those kinds of kids, often the long-term prognosis is really not very good. But kids need to be involved. Kids need to be involved in some kind of things. You know, I always encourage kids, for example, and parents as well, to especially with high school, to get involved in something, whether it's a sport, whether it's band. You know, they can be on the football team or water polo or whether it's a chess team, any kind of an organization where you can feel a sense of being a part of something. You know, it's a big part because kids need to. And often when they don't, when they're not involved in any kind of a group or, you know, a social organization at school, that's when they often struggle and end up falling into really a lot of negative kinds of behaviors and getting involved in relationships that tend to be somewhat destructive.
Well, and the possibilities for their future, if they have a mistake, do a mistake or make some of the wrong decisions, that could really impact very, very negatively their future. Do you talk about that, or does that not make much sense to them?
Yeah, it does. It does. And, you know, I've had kids. I had a young girl years ago that I saw. She was 12 years old. And, I asked her one of the times that we met, I asked her about some of her goals in life. And her goal was to have a baby and get on welfare. And,
wow.
You know, it's kind of really shocked because she was 12 years old. And, you know, and of course, you know, as we talked more, found out her mother had like 12 children and had been on, you know, public assistance her whole life and was kind of basically every few years would have a new one, so she was able to qualify for various things. But this is kind of what the child learned. And to her, you know, to a lot of teens, especially teens who aren't involved, who aren't, you know, part of any kind of a social organization, whether, like I say, high school band or some kind of a group or something like that, they feel a sense of, if I have a baby, I'll have a friend for life. And I've heard so many kids say, so many girls say that, you know, this will be, you know, then I have a friend, they'll always be there for me, they'll always be with me and things like that. It's just such a distorted view. Sometimes they'll have family members who have babies, and I will encourage them to let the younger girl, you know, the teen who wants the baby right away, to have the responsibility of the baby over the weekend, you know, with them being there kind of supervising, but getting up in the middle of the night and taking care of the baby, having to stay home to, you know, because there isn't child care, and experiencing the realities of it, I think is a good way to give an opportunity to see it's not, you know, your perspective is so skewed that to think I'm going to have a baby and then we'll just be best friends forever and it'll be great is not reality.
Oh, that's deadly. And it sounds like that'll work a little bit better. I've heard of the situations where kids were they had a doll, and they had to take care of the doll and do certain things in order to simulate the responsibility. Has that been effective? Have you seen that tried anywhere?
Yeah, I have. I have, and it is some, but it's more desirable for me to use a real child if there's a real child available. If a family member has a child, and like I say, obviously supervised, not leaving the young girl alone with the child, but supervised, and really when the baby wakes up at 2 a.m. and wants to eat, or the baby's diaper needs to be changed, it's real things that happen, and when or it's crying or whatever is going on, you have that responsibility all weekend long or something. I think there's kind of a sense of, okay, I can't sort of go through the motions here because I really do have to feed this baby. If I don't, it's going to continue to cry. Or I do have to change this diaper, and I do have to do these other things, because it's not feeling well or its tummy hurts or something like that. I think is a much better route if that is an option.
We're talking in terms of these kids, and one my observation in working with some of them is they're risk takers. There's a tendency to be at a risk, and so those are the ones that have a tendency to be the bad boy, or as you mentioned, the wild girl. They take the risk, but the risk sometimes is what really follows up the rest of their life. But could you talk a little bit about kids that the risk taking in some of the teens at least?
Well. I think sometimes as teens, there's a feeling, or young, there's just a feeling of being invincible. There's a feeling of I can do whatever, and there aren't any real consequences, or nothing's gonna, kind of like I'm bulletproof, sort of like. There's a lot of kids who have that kind of mentality, and some of that is just. It's they get from their friends. They get a lot of negative things. A lot of this sense of, like snitching or something like that. Or well, we don't do it. A lot of, I would never say anything or do this kind of. The behavior is role modeled from their peers. And once again, these are negative role models that they get because they're not necessarily getting the positive role models they need to at home. So they're seeing things outside that are not. The kinds of influence that we want our kids to have, but helping them really understand that these are the potential consequences of the choices that you make. This is the reality, of it. And often they don't, sit down, they don't actually think about what are the potential risks. I mean, the people who are locked up, people who are in prison for years because they're risk takers, they thought, this won't happen to me, I can do this, I can get away with this, and then they experience it, and how many times every day do you think they go back and say, gee, if I only had yesterday to do over again, or that day to do over again, I certainly wouldn't have made that choice, maybe done that kind of behavior, or those who, end up in the hospital in a serious condition, or, I see kids who are in accidents and other kinds of things that, where it's just basically life-altering, that as a result of not really thinking through, that they're not sort of bulletproof. They're not immune to the results of bad choices.
Unfortunately, since their forebrain isn't well developed, that's where the parents need to do the rules and setting the boundaries for them.
And parents, once again, setting rules and setting boundaries too, and being a role model that is consistent with that, this is what's okay, this is not what's okay, and being consistent, and parents being on the same page. And very often you have parents who are on two different pages, so they know, okay, with dad I can do this, and with mom I can do this, or if they live in different households, different sets of rules and things like that, it makes it very confusing for kids. So,
classic teenage strategy, divide and conquer.
Yeah, exactly. But then again, it's in my opinion, it's not just teenagers. Anybody would do that.
Yeah.
Any adult. If you're an adult and you have a job and you have two bosses, and one you can do certain things with, another one you can't do certain. One of them doesn't mind if you show up an hour late for work, and the other one is just a stickler for that. Suddenly you find yourself showing up late on the days that the one boss is there. So I think we all kind of, will try to get away with whatever we feel like we can get away with, whatever, you know, if I get rewarded for this kind of behavior or there's no consequences for it, well, I'm going to do what I, you know, I do. And so I think that happens with, I don't think we ever grow out of that to some extent.
Right. Well, so teens are just human. That's what that says.
Yeah. Exactly.
Got to remember that, even though they sometimes, I had four teenagers in the house at one time, and so get quite a bit of experience with teenagers as well as working with it. Well, let's revisit something we touched on a little bit earlier on the peer pressure. What do the parents need to know and keep in touch, particularly if they see their kids hanging out with some friends they're not sure about? But how do they deal or combat the peer pressure?
Well, it's pretty tough because the peer pressure is definitely there, but there again, who your kids associate with. And it depends. If you're talking about just a teen and suddenly you're seeing all these awful things versus being a little more proactive, and as your children are younger and you're getting them involved in groups and association, I keep going back to things like that. I mentioned band a couple of times because two out of my three kids went through band. Mm-hmm. Three myself. The youngest is actually 17 years old, so I have two that made it through teens and into adulthood and still in school, though. But, having them in around, you have a lot more influence when they're younger as far as the kind of peers they have and the kind of peer pressure they're going to be involved with when they're younger, because they're a lot more willing to say, okay, sure, I'll go ahead and get involved in this. I'll get into gymnastics. I'll get into some sport or something like that, and you do it, and then their peers, the pressure that they get is completely different. Or if they're involved in things that are more academic, the peer pressure is more performing academically. So, but when they're basically left to their own devices as far as where they go, the peer pressure can become quite negative. And to be able to, once again, back like I mentioned before, as far as taking the time to actually to talk to them, even to prepare them ahead of time, to sort of give them a sense of, these are the kind of things you're going to encounter, when you're in high school or something. These are the kind of things that are out there. You need to be aware that not only is this what you're going to encounter, but these are the consequences, the potential consequences of these kinds of behaviors. So it's not just they're sort of caught off guard. It's like, all right, these are what I need to do to sort of fit in and such like that.
Okay, so it comes down to the same thing. Talk, listen, and respect, just as you say in your book, respect the teenager and show it by how you listen to them. Listen very carefully. And share what your thinking is and let them share with yours, right? By sort of summarizing it in a few words?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's not quite so simplistic, obviously,
right,
when you have really severe issues. But parents need to realize if there was something that was sort of left alone, if you think about if you have an infection or something in your arm and you just sort of cover it up with a Band-Aid for a long amount of time, it's not something that's going to suddenly go away. It's going to take a lot to try to bring it back to where it was before. So the more time you put in ahead of time, like I say, when kids are little, they love to have time with mom, with dad, and to be able to interact with them. But to be able to, kids aren't adverse to interact, even teens, with their parents, as I think a lot of parents believe the case to be. It's they're more adverse to being lectured, to hearing, just mom and dad go off over and over about something instead of actually listening, instead of trying to understand the struggles that they're going through. I mean, how many times I've heard kids say, my parents don't have a clue what's going on in my life. They don't understand. Well, they don't, because there is no communication. There is no real talking about things. There is no sense of, yeah, they do respect what I have to say. They do actually listen what I'm saying, the kind of things I'm talking about, and they're actually, understanding and trying to give me input and trying to help me through this time. They're not going to verbalize.
You really got your work cut out for you if the kids get into that negative thinking, like, oh, they just don't care, they don't understand. That's when you really got a parent really has their work cut out for them. Let's talk about and sort of wrap this up. We just got a few minutes. Rules and expectations, and we've touched on this all the way through, but what would you say on the rules and expectations and how you communicate that, and what should you expect? Consistency, of course, is important.
Yeah, I think you have to be consistent. I think the rule, there needs to be between the parents that these are, this is, and they need to be realistic. I mean, it can't be a sense of, if you don't get straight A's, you can't do anything this weekend. You know, I encourage the parents to work with their children to do, for example, the best that they're capable of doing. Sometimes the best they're capable of doing is getting a C in a class, and that's fine if they're doing, you know, if they're doing the best that they can do. But I think, you know, rules and expectations need to be just clearly stated to our children. They need to know. It's not a sense of, oh shoot, you know, is this okay? Is this not okay? Did I do this wrong? Or is this situation? But to explain to them, these are what, you know, these are what we expect. This is your curfew time. This is how long you can stay up at night, you know, with your phone. This is, you know, how long you're able to talk or something on the phone. This is, you know, as far as your friends coming over, things like that. These are the order, you know, you have to get your homework done before you, you know, are playing video games or doing things like that. And so I think the more it's clear to them, as well as the consequences. You know, if you choose to break these things, you know, I'll often have, you know, as far as setting up consequences for behavior, we'll talk about, I'll encourage parents, especially with teenage kids, to sit down and decide, okay, what are the, to get feedback from their child. What do you think would be an appropriate consequence if you do break these rules or something like that? And many parents will say, well, I could never do that because my child would just say something really minor or insignificant. But in reality, most of the time, my experience is that the kids come up with things that are even more severe than the parents would come up with when they sit down and talk about it. So ultimately, it's the parents' decision what the consequences are and the expectations and rules. But when you involve your kids and you get their feedback, then if they violate those rules, it's not a matter of there's all this hostility and anger and things like that. It's a matter of, yeah, we all know these are what the rules were, and this is what the expectation, and I broke them, and these are the consequences, because we've spoken about it before. It's sort of already been addressed. It's not like it's coming, you know, it's coming out of nowhere. It's like, oh, I didn't think this was going to happen. But the child already knows. The child feels a sense of, you know, you're giving them a sense of respect that, okay, you understand, and you chose to do this, and these are the results of it.
Okay, well, we've gone over the five issues, and that. Now, Jay, I promised you a couple of minutes to talk about your book, how people could find it, where you are on the web, and that kind of thing. Go ahead. This is your sort of commercial break. Got 2 minutes.
Commercial break. Okay. Well, the easiest thing to do is go to the website. People can go to familyanswerman.com. All just one word, all together, no space in between, familyanswerman.com. From there, they will find a link where they can purchase the book through, I think, Amazon and Barnes & Noble. It'll take you right to the spot, right to the Amazon purchasing site where you want to do it. And it will also take you to the link of the Facebook page, Family Answer Man. And you can go on Facebook to Family Answer Man, and I have several articles that have recently been published in various magazines and online sites relating to parenting discipline, especially pertaining to the recent issues that happened in football with Ray Rice and Adrian Peterson. So they can take a look at some of those articles on the Facebook page at Family Answer Man. And there's also a spot where they can submit questions, and I respond to people's questions. So if you have specific parenting or relationship questions that you want to ask me, you can submit them right there on the Facebook page, and I will respond directly to them. I try to, every evening, take a little bit of time and respond to various questions that people have submitted to me.
Okay, well, very good. We've run out of time. This is Lon Woodbury with Parent Choices for Struggling Teens. We've been talking to Jay Fitter, a therapist in Southern California, and been talking about five essential issues to discuss with your teen and tween. And explained how you can get his book, The Guidance with Respect Your Children, and we've been talking about that. And well, thank you very much, Jay. It's good to have you here.
Thanks for having me on, Lon. Appreciate it.
Okay, and I have a brief announcement of my own. This is I'm in my third year doing programs on Answers for the Family. That's Al Cardoza's Parent Choices for Struggling Teens in LA Talk Radio. And for the time period, I'm ending the series. And today, this will be my last, at least for a while. And just wanted to let everybody know that's been following. I'll still be doing them elsewhere and doing the podcast type of things. So follow me on strugglingteens.com, and you can follow with what I'm doing. But I want to thank you very much. It's been a good run, and I've enjoyed these. And again, Jay, thank you very much for being my last guest in this series of Parent Choices for Struggling Teens.
You're listening to Parent Choices for Struggling Teens with Lon Woodbury, right here on LA Talk Radio.